Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 48 of It's Just Bodybuilding. It's Dusty Hanshaw, of course, myself, Big Ron Partlow. And this week, we got a lot of questions from Instagram. We're going to have some fun on It's Just Bodybuilding.
Boss, we got questions galore.
I got some good ones. There's a couple I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I like that, you know, obviously if people want to ask us training questions and stuff like that, that's really cool because, you know, I appreciate that they want to know. But I also like when a question comes through and I'm like, ah, this person's thinking of me.
Yeah, they thought this one out a little bit. I find out a lot of times that that I am not in the mix of the world of bodybuilding anymore, because I've had like, I got a couple questions where like, what do you think about this person? So I'm like, I've never heard of that person or their training. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting that the bodybuilding world has splintered into so many sort of like subgroups of, cause you know, if you think of bodybuilding in like the general term of what it means, it means, you know, eating and training to manipulate how your physique looks. You know, physique training is essentially what we're all doing. So there's so many different, like, you know, visions of what that is now.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, back when we started, the only thing there was pro bodybuilding.
Right.
Like, that was it. So you opened a magazine, and from the cover to the very last page, it was pro bodybuilders in every single fucking picture.
Yeah, there was never crossover. There was never, very rarely, unless like Pujanowski or someone, because he looked like a
body. Yeah, 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 yeah.
But you didn't get the crossover that you do now where you pay attention, you know? Like I watch the strongmen and the powerlifters and kind of keep an eye on their content.
Yeah, you'd see Ed Cohn in a belt ad.
Yeah.
But it's still Ed Cohn.
Yeah.
It's like the best. Right.
They're not sprinkling in the 277th best guy that you've never heard of in his new theory on training.
Yeah. Yeah. Or for example, now you have like obviously the whole wing of the Instagram sort of fitness world that has never competed. So it has nothing to do with competition, but there's still physique training.
Yeah.
So there's just so many more people now doing it. Like, you know, I remember when there was, I mean, you could have had all of the bodybuilders, all of the serious bodybuilders in my city, you could have had them all out to dinner at one table.
Right.
And I was growing up.
Yeah. You know, or if somebody mentioned a name, it was within our little bubble. So everyone knew everyone.
Everyone knew everyone.
You know, I mean, even at the forum level.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, the forum level. Yeah.
You would know guys that that was the one thing that I did differently when they did the forums is I always had a vision of wanting to utilize all of that to be known.
Right.
So I never understood the fake name. I remember like somebody asked me like, what's your screen name? I'm like, Dusty. They're like, no, your handle though. I'm like, Dusty Hanshaw. I have a plan that's going on right now. And that is that all you motherfuckers actually know who I am versus meeting me and not really knowing. Cause I wasn't like, by the time when you were doing forms on there as rep 300, you were also, you know, six national titles deep and like,
I'd been competing for a while. So I
knew who you were, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no. Why did I use rep 300? Oh yeah. Yeah. Because, Dave Palumbo was huge 280.
Right.
At AOL.com. That was his email. And then Jay Cutler's email. Because I used to email Jay back in the day, back in like 99, 2000, 2001.
Was it like Cuts 250?
Cuts 260.
That's right.
Cuts 260 at AOL.com. Yeah.
So we all had AOL accounts. All these young kids are like, what? What is that?
Yeah, yeah. So I remember that email. I said that to Jay last time I saw him. Actually, I joked about his email. I said, hey, do you ever log into Cuts260 at AOL.com and see if you got an email there?
I've been sending you shit for weeks and you never answer.
You never respond anymore. It's like you don't care. So that was funny. So I just thought of like that style of name.
Right.
And my initials are REP.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's Ronald Earl Partlow. And then I was trying to get to 300 pounds. I think I just hit 300. So it was in like 2001 when I started using that name. And I just hit 300.
I have like light bulbs. I never knew that that was your initials.
Yeah.
Nor did I see the crossover that our restaurant is Earl's. I mean, there's a lot going on right now. Do you own Earl's? Holy shit. No wonder you don't mind paying half the time, you prick.
No, I wish, eh? Yeah. So that's the rep 300. So I get your point about using your name. So I figured while I was already kind of trapped into being rep 300, I thought at least I have to stay consistent and use it on everything.
Right.
So, same sort of idea, you know?
Yeah. Once you got rolling and then people knew who you were anyways, you got to remember by the time you were a known bodybuilder, you were winning and stuff. Like I did two shows.
A lot of seconds in there. But yeah.
I did two shows and then junior nationals. So I didn't really get a lot of time to tell people who I was as an intro. Cause I was the believer in get better before I competed. And I just it took me time. You know what I mean? And I think that was a factor also. It was like, I actually used the forums to let people know I knew what I was doing versus a guy who your physique alone would be like, it's pretty fucking obvious what I'm doing.
I remember there was like a handful of people that just like clearly stood out as interacting with back then. And one of them, one of the guys that was consistent and awesome on all of the forums through all of that whole era was Justin Harris, Troponin.
Yep.
Yeah. So I used to, every time I saw Troponin post anything,
you'd look.
I click. Got to read this.
Yeah. No. This is actually going to be valuable.
Yeah. And then, of course, Dante.
Yep.
So you had Dog Crap. And
I love that new people are like, how did he come up with Dog Crap? I'm like, oh, if he could reverse the hands of time, knowing where that was going to go. Because you know that thread that he started, the cycles for pennies.
Yeah. Like,
that was just, he literally said he's online, he's reading all this stuff between that and just training ones. And he decided he needed something real quick. And he was just bringing in a different way to look at things. So he was like, Dog Crap, whatever. So he typed it in, created an account, and then started a thread. I don't know what his first one was, but it ended up being like 1,000 pages deep.
Yeah.
And by the time we get to 1,000 pages,
one of the biggest forum pages of ever.
Like you're like, oh fuck, my training is now called Dog Crap. Like it wasn't intentional. He just threw out a fucking name, and that's, if you know Dante, that's totally a him thing. Like, this'll do. I just want to say what I need to say here, not realizing it was going to become. I mean, guys still cite that shit now. They'll ask me like, but that's different than Cycles for Pennies. I was like, I wasn't a gym member when he wrote that shit.
Things have changed.
His fucking thought process has changed a little bit.
You know what's funny is I have this clear memory of this. There was this Canadian coach. I won't say their name, and I don't need to. No one would know them anyways, but they thought they were a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. And they had one person turn pro. So they thought they were, it's like they were going to take over. Right.
Basically a seat.
And I remember I was having a conversation with them. This was way back then. And I said, and Dog Crap training came up. Someone said something about Dog Crap training, and they said, Dog Crap training. What kind of fucking idiot comes up with that? And they just like roasted it. And then they were like, do you think anyone's going to remember Dog Crap training in 2 years time? Do you think anyone's going to remember something so stupid? And then here we are like 20 years later,
decades later.
And there's like more people than ever probably doing DC. If you look at the sheer number of people training.
Well, and he's tried to disappear.
Yeah,
like he doesn't take clients. He doesn't do anything. Like, most people, it's so funny because I told him, I'm like, if you didn't own True Nutrition, you could have fucking ran with that shit and made some a totally different, enormously successful business,
Right.
So now it's funny because of the years, anybody who goes to him that wants True DC training help, He literally just sends him my email address in like three words. Like, here's where you go. We were talking, and I was like, man, I had to write a two-way split, which is what you start with.
Right.
It had been so long, I had to think, like, what the fuck? I gotta think. And I had to remember what the two-way split was as far as body parts to write it. I told him, he goes, oh, fuck, there's no way I could remember the two-way split. He's like, I don't think I've written a DC like, program in like 10 years.
It's the funny thing is I remember, I don't know where I heard it, but the quote was, the people that are like the smartest, most knowledgeable people have forgotten more than the other people know.
Oh, for sure.
Like there's people out there that have that much knowledge. They've forgotten more than the next level of experts below them know.
Well, it's funny because I had told him at one point, I can't remember, I said, I wish I could remember, it would be a better story, but I said something one time, I typed it and I emailed to him, and he said something basically, God, you're starting to sound just like me. I was like, that was a quote.
Actually,
I said that. You did say that. I was actually quoting you, thinking you would know that you said that.
See, I don't know what I said. I've been talking, you know. Yeah, it's funny. There's a handful of people that are so such expert in their field that they can withdraw from the entire, you know, industry for decade and come back and still like, you know,
crush his Instagram was me pushing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he started.
I was like, just fucking do. And I spent an hour one night. I'll never forget. I'm in my place. I'm explaining every detail. I was laughing because I go, dude, you're like the most intelligent person I know. And this is the easiest platform to function on, but we're kicking it through because he needed to be able to write the way he writes. So people, you know, which is long.
I love the evolution of his first several posts, how he would continued in comments, and then there would be like,
don't fucking answer until you get all these written in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't comment for 20 minutes. Let me finish.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was funny. Okay. It was, it's good to see, but yeah, there, those were the days of the forum. And I remember, you know, you had Tom Prince on there. He was one of the guys giving real info, you know, like that whole crew. I remember when I first met Chad Nichols, which was in 2002 when I first met him. That's how I met him. I was like, oh, I'm rep 300. And he was like, oh, rep 300, you know, because he was on.
And
he
that's
was on
what I'm talking support. About.
Yeah. So I was rep 300 to him. You know, that's how we met. So it's just kind of funny. Yeah, it's kind of funny. So you got a lot of good cues, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, we're much more because last week I knew we had some, but we didn't have as many as I thought. This week, I have over 100 questions. Between the two of us, we got to have a ton.
Okay. So I'm just going to start at the top here. I'm not going to put too much thought into it.
All right. You could start with one and then I'm going to roll back through.
Okay. What were your immediate feelings when you won your pro cards?
All right. So mine is tricky. I've
heard this story a few times.
My quick version is I was happy in the morning because I knew. They called out. The nice thing was, as you know, they call everybody out by numbers. And I was at North America. The stage is really small. And they called out four dudes. And I was in the back row just based on where I landed standing there. And I hear Steve literally say, where's Dusty?
Right. Yeah.
Finds my name, calls my number. I walk out, and of course I'm the fifth guy called. So I go to walk to the side and he immediately goes in the middle. So then I slid into the middle and I knew right then and there, and I didn't move, you know, so I knew I had won and they were giving away three pro cards. So I was like, okay, I'm going to turn pro today.
Right.
And it was weird because after that,
the statistical odds, the odds,
yeah,
of
the odds of me losing to a middleweight or something were pretty low. So I knew I won, and then I didn't know, but I knew, you know. So when I did finally hear it and it was done, it was underwhelming. I was like, okay, cool. I'm at the bottom now. I got shit to do. You know, I told you guys before, like I went out to dinner with Jose afterwards, and it was Jose, a girl, my wife. We went to dinner. We sat down, and he literally about 5 minutes in goes, but you don't seem that excited. And I was like,
I'm a brand new pro now. I'm nobody.
I am now the smallest fish in the biggest pond. So yeah, I mean, it was just, I think it's also, and I think you probably get this too, is it was just checking it off the list.
Yeah.
You know, I knew I was going to get it. I didn't know when. and so it was good. But okay, now what, you know? And I would, if I could do it all over again, for example, in 2011, had we not screwed up and dieted me so far, I think I would have won in 2011, which is comical because I got 10th, to give you an idea of what I'm claiming. I'm glad we fucked it up because those years as an amateur built my name up versus me diving in as a pro and getting third call out in 2012.
I know what you mean.
Years of competition to build up, but yeah, it wasn't at all what I expected it to be, but it was an accomplishment.
I want to build on something you said there. I've talked about it before, but you know, I turned pro really late. I was 39 when I turned pro, so, and my body was pretty beat up, so I knew I was going to get my pro card that day. Mm-hmm. I just knew how I looked. So looking back, I'm not happy with the physique that I had in 2015. That was not my best. I had no off season whatsoever. I was really injured. I was fat and small when I started prep.
Right.
And, you know, that was the famous, I told the story where I sent Chris pitchers 20 weeks out and he texted me back and he goes, "You got 20 weeks and you need every single one of them."
Right. Yeah, because if you were fat and big, that's
fine. Fat and big's different.
Yeah.
Fat and big, that's different. I was fat and had no arms, no legs.
Yeah. We need to put muscle on, lose a shit ton of fat.
So it was like a miracle prep. And I was really lean, but I was kind of flat. Just because, but whatever. I was like kind of had the shredded, peeled, dry look. So I knew I was gonna get my pro card, but was more relief. I was just relieved because I was pretty beat up. Like my knee was bad. I hadn't blown my quad yet, but that's because my knee was like degenerating.
Didn't you say that you had already decided that was the last show you were doing?
Yeah, that was the last time I was going to try.
Right.
And my hip was starting to hurt. And then my tricep and lat on the left side were just giving me so many problems. And my neck was like fucking always bad. I was always in pain. So I just was thought like, fuck, like it was just relief.
Right. You know?
But I also want to touch on like the people that are in a hurry to turn pro. You have to remember that it doesn't matter when you turn pro if you don't have a pro physique.
True.
Like if you're going to compete as a pro, it's one thing. Like, you know, at 39 I turned pro and it was fucking okay. Finally, I got my pro card, and then, you know, wound up doing other stuff.
Yeah.
With it. You know, the pro card helps the gym, the pro card helps my training business, the pro card helps everything. So I am using my pro card as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But if you want to use it to compete, then you're going to actually have to like have a real pro physique, not just enough to squeak by at one show.
Right.
Because there's people that can squeak by and they get that close call and they win the card, but there's no squeaking by at the pro level.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you got like the Jay Cutlers and then you have like the other guys and there's a big difference.
Yeah.
And you know, you got to carry an immense amount of mass. The condition has to be ridiculous. Like there's lots of people that are in a hurry to get their pro card right now. How tall are you?
5'10".
So there's a lot of guys out there that are 5'10" that are looking to get their pro card at 225 or something.
Yeah. It's scary.
Then you're standing there at 270 shredded.
I think that's something people don't get either. And you know, this is true. Some guys look really good by themselves. Some guys don't look really good by themselves.
Some guys have beautiful.
And then when you put them in a lineup, shit changes. Like I've never, truthfully, I mean, I have a couple shots that work out, but overall when I'm by myself, it's kind of, cause you really see the weaknesses by myself.
Right. I get it.
But then when I'm in a lineup, I'm so big.
Yeah.
That you're kind of like, but it's ugly, but it's big.
Well, like,
you know what I mean?
The stuff like your back double by and your back lat spread it's like.
Yeah. So that's what I mean is you want to have that ability in those lineups where there's a reason that you can hang even if you're not You're gonna have one of those guys. You know what I mean?
You're gonna have to be big. You gotta be big. If you want to be an open pro bodybuilder, you gotta be big.
And yeah, the game has changed so much. The game has changed.
And even guys like I don't think people realize how big even the small guys are.
Oh God. Yeah. Like, I think it's comical to me. Also when they lose, and Lee Priest used to push on this all the time, of height.
Yeah.
You know, because people would be like, oh, you know who one of the biggest dudes you'll ever see in person that people don't realize? John De La Rosa.
Yeah.
Fucking massive. Because he's compact, but he's fucking huge. His forearms are enormous. His arm, I mean, every body part is just huge. And he's in a t-shirt and you're just like, shit. And
have you seen him at, like, I've seen him at like 270 before.
Yeah, yeah, I did a appearance with him one time, a speaking thing, and I remember, and I mean, I was big. I'm like, God, he's way fucking bigger than I am.
Yeah, he's like, big. We should have him on the show.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys. No one ever thinks mass monster when they think of John because he is put together so well as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you see him in person, I guarantee you, most people when they see him in person, they're gonna go, oh fuck, you're bigger than I thought you were.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny. true.
You know.
Okay, so you got a question?
Yeah. Shit. Do I have a question? I have a million of them. Okay. I'm going to start with something basic because I think it's good. I'm about 22% body fat. Should I cut before hiring a coach and doing an off-season / show prep?
Well, I think he's sort of looking at things wrong. If he's 20, so this is my honest opinion. If you're 22% body fat, you're a long ways off competing.
Yep.
Like, that should not be a priority. You should look at mastering your nutrition, figuring out your body, building up some muscle, changing your default settings, you know, getting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sure. Like, being 22% body fat has to be like way, way in the rearview mirror before you start to think like, okay, it's time for me to compete. You know, that's my opinion. You should like kind of think about mastering your nutrition first, walk or, you know, get down to 12% and stay there for like a long time and put muscle on. And that's what I think would be the ideal answer to that question.
Yeah. And my only tweak to that would be, agree 100%. I think hiring a coach now might be a good idea because the fact that you're asking that question respectfully means you have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, that's
because 22% body fat is fat.
Yeah, you need help. Exactly.
You can learn the nutrition and do it on your own. But I'm a big fan of just let's go to somebody who can get me there quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
Hand over the reins and then just fucking execute. You know, because you're right. Like, I can get you ready for a show at 20% body fat, but I guarantee you're going to find out you're a lot smaller than you thought you were.
Yeah, and the look won't be what you want at the end. I mean, sometimes it comes out pretty good, and they're like, oh, shit, I look pretty good. But most of the time, it's the next show where they, you know, can really pull the look in.
For sure.
So, okay, good one. Okay, I love these questions. This is specifically for me, I think. I don't know how much of an opinion you'll have. Hopefully you do. Would you rather see Metallica live in 1989... or Pantera live in 1991?
I just love that there's specific years, which proves it's definitely for you. How the fuck would I know?
Okay, so here's the answer to that. Here's the correct answer.
You didn't say his answer. It's the correct answer.
Yeah, this is the only correct answer. 91's a little early to see Pantera. You have to wait until Far Beyond Driven has come out. And then you go see them on that tour because then they have the best set list there.
I love that there's an explanation of why. And I'm going to Google this now because I'm going to want to know what that fucking means.
There you go. And 1989 would be a perfect year to see Metallica because they only had 4 thrash metal albums and it's all the classic shit. And the set list would be amazing. So there you go. And they still have the long hair and they're still like old school headbangers at that point. So that would be one of the all-time time travel concerts. Do you have a time travel concert, Dusty? There's a question for you.
I mean, Jesus, like, no, because I don't even have a thought process like yours. I'm over here analyzing the fact that Ron knows how many albums. If you, I'm trying to think, like, who's my absolute, if I were to, if I had a favorite band,
is that
I couldn't
not
tell you how many albums they have or what an 89 GT bicycle looks like. I don't know that either. Fuck. My dog's name is, what's your name again? Fuck. These Q&As, I want you guys to just start trying to stump Ron. We're going to do a stump Ron segment soon, and you will all lose every fucking time. Okay, sorry. I got a little excited there. Okay, let me see.
Okay.
Ah, okay, this is a good one. This is a friend of mine, so I want you to answer this one. And you can choose to select years that this matters or not, Ron.
Oh, okay, okay. I'm good at the years.
Now, first off, this is a female client who gets peeled out of her fucking head. So she's awesome, awesome. Her fasted blood sugar is at 124. She's been tracking it throughout the day. The lowest it'll get is 94. She's thinking it's her diet. Could I be compounding my meals? Maybe it's time for a diet reset. And also just did a show. So there's a lot of data you don't have to answer that we could, is really what I wanted to talk about.
So the main thing is her blood sugar is a little high sometimes.
Well, I mean, fasted at 124 is through the roof.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so really, really high. So let me ask you this. What are the things that you're following up a show, the Arnold Classic, to give you an idea of the dateline from when she was peeled out of her mind to be at 124 now, fasted, and the blood sugar is lowering throughout the day. What would you look at to bring that morning down?
Oh, well, is she doing any HIIT cardio?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm just, throwing these things. You're going to answer.
I mean, so some of this stuff, I think I don't like to comment too much. I some of the medical stuff, I like to sit back. I'm like, okay, not my wheelhouse, because I'm not, a doctor. Also too, like, there's a little bit of what's normal and then what's normal under the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily mean there's something. Well, 124 is high, but if it was just slightly high, it doesn't mean there's something wrong. Sometimes it's just an adjustment period that is natural,
mm-hmm.
and it comes back and fixes itself through homeostasis eventually over time.
Mm-hmm.
So there also too is also the, you don't necessarily have to do more. Sometimes you're doing everything you need to do and it's just time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, it's hard to answer that. I mean, she's got blood sugar management issues. I mean, is it time to just go see the doctor?
Yeah, I mean, I think based on the fact that I know who it is and she gets peeled out of her mind, and relatively easily, to be honest with you.
She needs to, like, just work on raising her insulin sensitivity or what?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would look at too. And then also, definitely, there's two factors. So I'm going to answer this broadly as opposed to this individual, since we don't have enough information. When you are increasing your carb intake relatively drastically at any point, I'm actually working with a guy who we just did this, and he watches his numbers year round, and he was like, hey, I'm up to a little over 100 in the morning.
Right.
And I know what he's doing. And I said, yeah, it's fine. You're by just resetting. It'll come down. And then the other day he sent me, a morning screenshot or a picture of his numbers, and it was like 76 or something.
Right. So it was
the body adapting, like you said, because we had went from, he was maintaining to I want to grow again. So the jumps were fast and the body just hadn't figured it out yet. Now, knowing that this was long ago, because we're talking about March, I would definitely be looking at you may need to actually do a true keto diet, which most people don't do.
Just to max insulin sensitivity.
Exactly. Everything that I would say after this is, how do we max insulin sensitivity as soon as possible? And like you said, HIIT cardio helps a ton with those kind of things. You do that stuff short term, you should be able to bring that number down pretty quickly without getting really, really complex. So because a lot of people watch the show, I'm not going to delve in too deep or it gets confusing, but If you email me on the rest of that question and give me some more data, I can help you with what you need to fix across the board for that one. But yeah, I mean, for any of you guys that are wondering if your levels are a little high, those are the two quickest ways to bring it down.
I would also recommend, like, if there's a persistent problem with it, you need to get full blood work done to see if there's something else correlating with those numbers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, insulin sensitivity is the main issue there. So, okay.
And those numbers are important too. I mean, these are things I ask for from clients, because if you start with someone who's like in a prep that was at that high, you're on an uphill battle already. It's much like if I start with a client, they're like, okay, I'm doing 2 hours of cardio right now. It's the off season. I'm like, well, fuck.
Right. I know there's a bit of a trend
there, you know.
There's a bit of a trend with some coaches that I've just heard people say that their coach had them start their diet with 2 weeks of keto and then they switched over to like a normal diet. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's like something that, you know, like the carbon copy coaches, maybe they just do that with everyone to try to like
without the numbers that doesn't even make sense, you know what
right,
I mean,
right? But they're like, oh, half the girls that come to me have insulin resistance problems, so I'll just keto all of them for 3 weeks off the bat, right? And it's like, it's kind of done like for that reason.
I've heard of that too, and I'm always like, I like to know the facts, like you said, blood work. I like just doing the glucose testing daily. Same thing with blood pressure. You know, someone say, how do I know my blood pressure's high? I'm like, I don't know. Test it.
Right.
Like Amazon, I'll send you the link to what you need. And you'll be all set. What do you got next?
Hey, what's up, guys? Scott here. I'm going to jump in with a quick commercial break, and then we'll get right back to the program. So I'm trying to be creative now, you know, and say something unique each time now that I do one of these ads. So today with TrueNutrition.com, I'm going to focus on the fact that you don't have to be tethered to a prefabbed pre-workout anymore. You know, I've been using pre-workout since 2005, 6, I don't know. That's about when they started getting real popular with Jack 3D. But anyway, you know, you get the doses that they give you, and sometimes they're good. There's some good ones out there. There's some good ones with good flavor. Sometimes they're cut in corners. Sometimes there's one with a good flavor that still was cut in corners. And what I'm going to talk about today is the fact that you don't have to be tethered to these prefabbed pre-workouts anymore. You could still use them, and if you want to, you can amp them up. You can charge them up by adding in some bulk citrulline malate or some bulk beta-alanine. You know, we all have a unique response to supplements. Surprise, surprise. You know, we talk about that all the time. You respond. We all have a unique response to drugs and training, you know, and nutrition. Why wouldn't we have a unique response to supplements too? So you can get more what you want. You can get more what you like too. Like, I like that beta alanine tingle that you get, that flush. I know I'm going to have a good workout when I feel that, but I know other guys that don't like that. So I'll pick up the beta alanine and I can amp up my pre-workout no matter what I'm taking. If I'm making one myself, if I'm using a prefabbed store-bought product, I can amp that up, supercharge it with the stuff that I like. So I have a bag of the beta alanine and I have a bag of the citrulline malate. I also keep the EAAs, a bunch of other stuff too. So I basically make my own supplements at the doses I want. And through experimentation, I figured out what I liked. So I'm going to encourage you to go ahead and do that yourself, and do that by buying the bulk supplements from our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com, and use our code to get an additional 5% off. The code is advices plus. You know, for me, obviously, it's even more important than you're directly supporting us so that we can keep doing this. I try to, as I said before, get companies on board that they carry products you guys would buy anyway. So if you're going to buy protein, if you're going to buy pre-workouts, then, you know, check out our sponsor, because it directly goes to help us keep putting these shows out. Our other sponsor is getazoth.com. That's AZOTH, getazoth.com. We also have a link to their Amazon. I'm on that kick with Zynomite right now, and I've been experimenting with that. And you know, dopamine is that, like I said last time in the last ad, molecule of more. Dopamine is what keeps us in the drive, keeps us in the game, keeps us seeking, you know, keeps us wanting to achieve. And, I want to try to keep my dopamine up during the day. Of course, Dr. Dean says we want to keep it down at night. So I definitely want to try to flush that out before I go to bed. But, you know, nonetheless, I want to keep that drive up. I want to try to achieve as much as I can. I'm 43 now. I hopefully have a good few years left in me, but I want to make sure I can get the most out of those years and be as successful as possible. And it's products like Azoth 2.0 and products like Total Focus, Pure Energy. Those things help me to stay on my task and get as much done, be as productive as I can. All right, guys, let's get back to the show. Oh, and we do have a code for them, ADVICES10. That's good at both the Amazon and at getazoth.com. Thanks for listening.
Which movie villain character matches Dusty's and your own persona the most, and why?
Oh, wow. Movie villain character.
I told you there were some good ones off the beaten path. This is a
great one. I hate when they stump me with one where I've got to think here, and I'm live and in action here.
Which movie villain?
Well, who can you think of for yourself? Because that should be, like, I'm trying to think of a movie villain character. Oh, whoa. What was, fuck, was it? Okay, I'm thinking of one for Ron, but it's not, it's the brain part that I see logged
okay.
in.
Okay,
do
okay.
you remember Samuel L. Jackson was like Glass Man or whatever in a
Mr.
show?
Glass? Yeah, Mr. Glass.
Okay, his mentality and like the thought process, the depth of knowledge was there that kind of reminds me of you. Like, I can see plus, you being like a really sinister fuck. Yeah, well, the problem is you earned him. It wasn't like you just slipped down one set of stairs.
Right. Okay. That's funny. I take that.
He's like, I'll accept. Oh, right. Fuck.
I think you'd probably be most like Christian Bale's character in American Psycho.
I'm afraid of the number of women that have seen that are going. Yes.
I can see you sitting there having conversations with people and nodding as they're talking and thinking about strangling them and smashing their head in and you know. That sort of thing.
Anybody
and,
who knows me well actually has like probably seen that. They're like, oh, he's doing it now.
Right. Except, I guess, the music scenes would be more me.
Very valid. Very. How many people now are going to watch that movie who have never seen it just to understand?
The best clip of American Psycho is the Huey Lewis in the News clip. When he has that dude over and they're having a drink and he puts a Huey Lewis in the News record on and he does that little monologue about Huey Lewis, that is just fucking
which genius. Would be you.
It is just genius writing. And then he fucking smashes the guy's head in, right? And it's the best scene. It's one of my favorite movie scenes of all time. Sometimes I just when I really feel like killing someone, like when someone says something to me and I think, did you just fucking say that to me? But I can't smash your face in right now because we're standing in public.
Should you just listen to Huey Lewis or what do you do?
Whenever I feel that sort of anger bubbling up, I put that scene on from American Psycho and it makes me smile.
Yeah. This is how I would have handled this if the world was different.
Yes. And I also completely agree with him on his take on Huey Lewis.
Do you ever like this is something. So you remember when Saw was first released, the very first one?
Yeah, the first Saw. I remember that was that caused like such a big deal.
So I left the theater, number one, completely ecstatic of how phenomenal the movie was. Yeah. And number two, thinking the people who wrote this should probably be arrested. Because the fact that your fucking mind can go to these places.
It's like
if you think about like I couldn't create that.
Yeah.
At all. And when you watch that movie, you're like, okay, so you guys are really fucked up.
The first one was fantastic. I think even the second one was really good, had a great ending.
Yeah, no, they drug it after that. Yeah. They drug it down, which of course, I mean, I get it. They need money like anyone. And they knew. And here's the best part. The third one, meh. But guess what? I saw all of them.
Oh,
so
right.
They still got my money. It still worked.
Yeah. Emily watched all of those too. She was like a fan of the Saw series. I think she's twisted and sick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look who she's dating. So
she's got to put up with me.
Like, I mean, she'd probably listen to Huey Lewis right now.
Put that on there. Put that on.
Oh, that's a solid question. Now that's gonna fuck with me. I'll be texting you more options of fucked up people that you could be. All right, okay. Let's see.
It's your turn.
So I'm trying to catch some. I like to get when I have so many. Okay, this is good. And this is a client of mine. How to reprogram your mind. Oh, this is actually perfect for you to answer. So I'm gonna let you answer on your own. How to reprogram your mind on less is more approach when it comes to gear. And just for background, he used to just be like a full bore, loaded up bodybuilder. And now he decided, like you, that he wants to bodybuild, look like a bodybuilder, but he just doesn't want to take all the shit anymore. So, you know, we're talking TRT more or less.
Yeah.
In great shape. Still has a wacky physique, but he wants to get past the mental side because when he started this, I think what it was his expectation was lower than reality. I don't think he realized how good he could be. So we dialed it down to get to a level. And I think now it's like, so now his mind has changed. Like, maybe I want to try to compete like this. Which he could do perfectly fine. I mean, he's got that much muscle. But yeah, so how did you handle or was there even any anything with dropping the dose and just changing what you're doing?
Well, I don't really. I hope I answered this correctly for him, give him something to go with. I guess there's a bunch of things. So as far as training, he already knows how to train because he's big.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
trains hard, you know, he's a big guy, trains hard. He already knows how to train, but he needs to keep in mind there's no more need to ever take some of those risks that he was taking before.
Right.
Like, I still see guys doing stuff like they're 3 weeks out from a show and they're squatting, like doing a 3-rep max.
Right.
Like, you know, you just can't, I don't know if he ever does that stuff, but just throw that stuff away. You're never going to do that stuff again. It's not worth it.
Right.
Just train smart and hard. You know how to train. Just train smart and hard. And the diet, he'll realize how key diet is. Like, when you have that diet knowledge, it trumps 75% of the drugs anyways.
Right.
Like, I realized I'm an absolute master of my diet. Like, I know what my body needs. I know what it doesn't need. You know what I mean? So just rely on diet. Diet's going to be your best friend. The stricter you are and more consistent you are with your diet, the better your results are going to be. Mm-hmm. And as far as the gear thing, there's all sorts of positives. Like, he's going to find that his body almost operates more efficiently on less stuff. Like, just feels like different. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, nothing feels forced. It's just kind of a, I don't know, maybe a mental thing. There's also like, I got like a sense of well-being too after I was like just running the TRT for like 6 months. I sort of felt like, man, you know, I'm going to be really healthy. Like, blah, blah, you know, like that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you start to have that sort of mental benefit where, you know, and you know, my blood work is awesome. And like, you know, so it's just all those mental benefits. And I feel like what I'm doing is like sustainable for an extremely long period of time.
Right.
And that's another benefit. You know, you get to a point where, you know, I had so many injuries that I'm like, I'm never going to get any bigger.
Right.
Like, I'm just, come on now, you know, after this many years of training, I've kind of done everything I can get. Like, I've got all the size I'm ever going to get out of it. You know, it's, and you know, so now I have to make a decision. Like, you know, if you keep pushing it, you might not be able to train at all.
Right.
And if you just like call it a day and go, okay, now I'm going to train smart and hard and, you know, just not take the gear. Then you look at like your body as like a, something you're trying to sustain and keep, you know? So just those little things, you know, I mean, when I was competing, if I had a sore elbow, it was just, there's a show coming, right?
Yeah. Fuck it.
Fuck your elbow.
Yeah.
But now it's like, I'll just like turn to Braden and go, I'm not doing triceps today.
Right.
And he'll be like, oh, okay. And then I'll give him a spot. Like, I've done that before, right? Or I'm not doing this exercise. Like, or we'll do a warm up of something. And I'm like, no, I'm going over there. I'll come back and spot.
And that's something, you know, I mean, speaking of that, for all you guys that are listening and are younger that are not in this stage yet, take this simple advice. When something doesn't feel right that day, walk away.
Yeah, just walk away.
Like, I haven't, knock on wood, had any major things, but I've had some things where I was given a warning.
Right.
And I was, and I don't, like, listen, I'm somebody who writes programs and DC and these things where, yes, today you're supposed to deadlift.
Yeah.
But when you go in, and you got to understand, there's a difference between bitching out and understanding your body. In fact, just yesterday, we're using the Arsenal hack squat.
Right.
And last, you know, we always do. I did three things before it and just, we've talked about this. I'm actually trying to find ways to make myself weaker before I get to my compounds.
Yeah, yeah.
So we get to that and loaded with the band. And I use the small, I don't know, it's like almost a half inch, maybe orange band as my band.
You don't want to put a big band on a pendulum because it'll make
it. No, it's not a pendulum. No, I'm using the hack.
Oh, the hack.
So
the
a
hack.
Reverse band. So right, I'm making it easier. Band.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But I stack, I put 18 plates on it. And last week I got 16. So today I was like, or yesterday I was like, okay, I want to get at least 17 reps on this. And at like 9, I could feel my right leg pushing a little more.
Right.
And I was like, okay. So I paused, which I never need to pause before 10. I paused, took some air. At 12, I still had enough strength to keep going, but now I could feel that right leg doing something. So I racked it. I said, fuck it. I'm not finishing this exercise. I'm just going to move on to the pendulum. Younger me pushes through that.
Yeah.
Just goes. And the thing is nothing in those, or let's just say I would have gotten set to 17 reps. So 5 more reps. The things that could have happened negative versus the benefit of those 5 reps. Are you kidding?
Meaningless. Yeah.
It's one set. Walk away. Now, in hindsight, what's funny is Will, my training partner, he keeps the platform one click higher than me.
You didn't switch it.
Well, but I chose not to. He goes, oh, you didn't switch. Like, oh, it feels fine today. But it didn't hit me until this morning. I was like, fuck. I didn't like that. I thought I was okay, but once it got heavy, I must have been shifting in some way.
Yeah,
so it's good.
Yeah.
I was able to check it off the list. I know now why, because he texted me this morning and said, how's the hip? And I'm like, it's fine. Like there was, I turned around and beat the shit out of the pendulum right afterwards. So there were plenty of things that should have told me I didn't have an issue other than the platform was off. But driving home for you guys, like there's nothing, as much as we say, treat every set like it's your last. Same thing. Don't make it your last. Don't get injured on a set
that's a caveat.
Body's literally telling you this ain't right. I don't feel one leg over the other ever. So once you do and you can't deny it and then it's starting to build in your brain, it's like, don't be an idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
Pull that shit. Yeah. You know, leg press, do something, fucking go home.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's never bad to walk away from a movement as long as you know you're not just being a bitch.
Well, the bottom line, too, if you hack squat 800 pounds for 8 easy reps and go home, your legs will not shrink.
Right. Yes. Valid.
Like it doesn't take like when you don't have to go to failure to stop from shrinking. Like right. You just put your muscle under a bit of load and it's like sticking around for another week. You'll be fine.
You'll be okay. You'll be okay on next Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. Shit. Okay. I got a good one here.
Fire.
I'd love to hear what you think gives your lives meaning. I think it could help a lot of people.
Ooh, all right.
Here's your life meaning, Dusty.
Here's the thing. I think that my true answer would probably go against anything that a psychiatrist would tell you. I have to chase something.
Right.
If I'm not like literally, and it's funny, but I had I took a break. One time I was like, I'm going to take a little vacation and I found I got stressed.
Right.
Because I can take a day off from pushing. I can't take 2.
Right.
Like it's become a thing that people who know me understand. Like even when I travel, like I don't tell clients I'm on vacation. I just work.
Right.
It's not that I'm this great trainer. It's that I can't do that. So I have to be pushing always. When people say, when I'm X amount of years old, I'm going to retire. I'm like, well, why? I would never, ever stop working.
Right.
Like, I might do something else. It might not be about money anymore, but So for me,
you got a project.
It's the chase of anything. It's in the gym. I mean, that's why as I plan my exit from bodybuilding in the next couple of years, I will already know what I'm going to chase next.
Yeah.
You know, so that gives me meaning, and it has nothing to do with anyone else. Like, you'd know this, Ron. Like, if it weren't for Instagram and all these things, all these sets would still be happening. I just wouldn't be recording them.
Right. I totally get what you mean.
So, yeah, that'd be my thing for sure.
Have to chase something. Got to have a goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've got a reason to That's wake a good up answer. To get out of bed every day, you know?
Yeah. Okay. That's good. What gives my life meaning? Oh, geez. Well, difficult. It's just such a meaningless void, Dusty.
My life doesn't really have a ton of meaning.
it's just like constant sex and eating, watching TV. It's like completely unfulfilling.
Dudes are like, how do I sign up for this?
Yeah. I really don't know where it ends. I will say that I obviously have like I guess it's the same sort of feeling. I guess I don't really word it as have to chase something, but I always have to have something that I'm trying to master.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I word it differently because I guess winning, I mean, obviously I was competitive.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I don't really feel like I'm the type of guy who has to win at everything.
Right.
But I like to offer my version of it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
For sure.
Like, I like as a bodybuilder, I obviously I competed to win because I was trying to turn pro and stuff, but I don't feel like I was ever trying to look like someone else. And then when it comes to like business, like take the gym for example with my partners, you know, it's one of the things that's been kind of the main thing for me is that I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want to be confused with another gym.
Right.
Well, it has to be like our way.
Yep.
Everything has to be our way, and we have to, you know, do it our way and that sort of thing. That's really important to me. Cause when you hear back, like it's the same with your coaching, like you want to coach your way, you know, like you have a way that you coach, and if people don't like it, that's fine. They can go somewhere else. You're not going to try to like change your coaching style to capture like some more people. It's not about that. It's about like doing things your way and your vision of how it's done. And, you know, seeing people really happy with that.
Right.
You know, offering something that people really appreciate. I find that rewarding. Also too, I mean, you know, one of my favorite quotes is like some of Jordan Peterson's stuff is awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, like his stuff about how life is about bearing as much responsibility as you can.
Right.
And that's something I always try to think of, because every time I take on extra responsibility, I mean, you have to be careful not to overcommit, because if you can't manage your time, then you're going to let people down, which is also really important to me. So I'm really careful not to overcommit because I don't want to let people down.
Right.
But at the same time, you want to take on as much responsibility as you can manage, because that really drives me.
Right.
Like gets me out of bed. Like when I don't have any responsibilities, that would be really bad for me. I would be probably self-destructive and probably find bad things to do with my time and money. Yep. And, you know, that sort of stuff. So I need a responsibility. I need maybe to know that someone's depending on me. So I have to get up in the morning because someone's depending on me. I have to get home and do those emails because someone's depending on me.
Yeah. They're waiting. Yep.
Yeah. That drives me. You know, having a dog drives me, because there's something else that you have. You're always like, you have a responsibility.
Yep.
You know, and it's, I like that, because I think my life needs structure. And I, you know, the older you get, you kind of overanalyze yourself. I think I'm actually far more impulsive than I realize.
Right. But because you've got these responsibilities, that blocks you from being overly impulsive. Yeah.
I think I'm very impulsive and would probably have a hard time in some areas if I didn't make myself, you know, sort of follow this routine. Like bodybuilding is like really important. So I think that's why I really gravitated, because I knew that, you know, as many bad things as there are in bodybuilding, I knew that it was actually good for me to bodybuild.
Well, yeah, foundation. I think a lot of people, that's why addicts are often great bodybuilders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have too. I've worked with plenty of recovering addicts that click really well with it because you have to lock into it. And yeah, you're trading an addiction for an addiction.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one at least is a healthy one, you know. I definitely get that the need of doing it your own way. I used this example one time for a client. She loved the way she looked, but she wanted to come in the way the judges told her. And I kept telling him, like, listen, different judges, different answers. It's right. Like, this is your best look. If you get in front of the right judge at the right time with this look, you win. So she said, no, I want to do what they say. I want to come in softer. Okay, cool. So we did a show, we came in softer, and she didn't place well. And the judge told her, you look better harder. And she was super, super disappointed. And I said, do you know why you're so disappointed? She goes, well, yeah, I didn't place well. I did what I said. I said, no, it's because you agreed with them.
Right.
You look better harder. You know you look better harder. You've lost before looking hard and still been happy with yourself. But when they said you look better harder, you thought in the back of your head, yes, I do. Yeah. So you just did a whole prep to create a look you don't even like. And it didn't work.
Right.
So it's like, you know, that's always been my take as well with life is like, I just want to do it my way because at least I like it then. It would suck to agree with someone if they go, yeah, your gym is just like every other fucking gym, but it was successful. You'd be like, yeah, it is.
Right. Right. I know what you mean.
You know, like you wouldn't be the face of West Coast Iron or your partner's the face of West Coast Iron if it wasn't truly a part of you. You know? So I totally dig that. That's awesome.
Okay.
Let's see. I got, here's a good one. How do you push yourself out of your comfort zone to continually improve? And have you always been able to take constructive criticism?
Well, I'd say no. And the constructive criticism, I haven't always been good at taking. Sometimes it really upset me, but then I had to like think, okay, it's constructive criticism, you know? When you say, when you're younger, you know, younger and more sensitive. What was the first part of the question?
How do you push yourself out of your comfort zone to continuously improve?
That was always just a like kind of a life 101 thing. Like I knew that from the very beginning. I didn't really have to be taught that you had to push yourself out of your comfort zone. Like it just absolutely seemed like basic common knowledge. And I always felt like I could see when other people weren't pushing themselves out of their comfort zone. I remember being disappointed with other people's work ethic at a very young age.
Right.
Like I remember being in Taekwondo when I was like 12 years old. And by the time I was 12, I was already winning like gold medals at like forms competitions and, you know, stuff like that, sparring and, you know, so I was a good 12-year-old. I had a green belt with a blue stripe when I was like 12. I had a blue belt when I was 13. So I was in Taekwondo for years. But when I was like 12, 13, I would go to the men's classes because they were like way, like that's how I wanted to train. But when I went to the kids' classes, like I thought the conditioning was like, wasn't as hard and it just wasn't as hard.
Right.
And so, you know, I remember going to the men's classes and still seeing people that I thought were slacking.
Right.
And that's like a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah.
You're like, that guy's kind of, that guy's not sprinting as fast as he could. Cause you know, you had more
in you. Yeah. You had more in you.
You had more in you. Yeah. Yeah. I just remember thinking that at a young age. So I guess I kind of always took it as a, I don't know, maybe there's something sort of psychotic about it too. Like you're constantly testing yourself against yourself and, you know, I don't know, but that's just how I always did things.
Yeah.
You know,
I think for me, it's on that aspect of the question. And I've talked about this before on other radio shows is, you realize, so when you're, you know, there's actually something called peak to peak thinking where when you get to a certain level of ability, you can see the next peak and you realize, oh fuck, there's another level. You can't see the one three away. So every time you improve yourself, you realize, oh, there's more and there's more and there's more. Like I tell clients all the time, what is intense to you today will not be in 5 years because you improve and you realize just how much is in you, how much is left. So I think that chase of finding really what you're capable of, And I'm going to make you tell the quote. But what was the quote the BMX guy that you were telling me about said about wanting to make sure that when he gave his body back at death, he...
Yeah, that was Matt Hoffman. We were talking about him last week, but Matt Hoffman had a famous quote. He was in Sports Illustrated, and he had a quote that was in there one time, and it was, at the end of my life, if there's anything at all left of my body, I've completely wasted it.
And it's funny because when I've thought about that, like since you told me, it was, I think that was off the air that you mentioned that. I get that. Like,
right.
You know, and not a desire to be injured, but a desire to really push. Like everybody says, you're given this, the shuttle or whatever the fuck you want to call it. And I just love the idea of thinking, I wonder what it can really do. And it continues as you get mentally stronger. Like, again, we're back to that chase. You realize, like, you know, I get 16 reps on the hack with something that everyone else would say is crazy. My first thought is, I bet you if I was conditioned better, I could have gotten 18. So that's, it's just the way the brain functions. So yeah, for me, it's just wanting to know what it is. And truthfully, having trained with Dorian Yates, God, what was that? 7-8 years ago now. I realized training with a retired Mr. Olympia, the levels of intensity.
Yeah.
He was probably half-ass in that workout, and he was the most intense man I'd ever been around in my life.
Right, just like, giving off energy, like, yeah.
I was like, I'm not on his retired level yet, and I'm trying to turn pro.
Yeah.
Like, you realize that, and most people who would train with me at the time would say I was absolutely insane and the most hardcore person that ever been around.
Right.
And I'm sitting there going, I'm getting dusted intensity-wise by a dude who's retired and doesn't... That's just his nature.
Yeah.
I bet you he approaches everything in his life with that. You know?
Like, well, it's there. It's a skill.
No, another way. Yeah, it's a skill. It's a skill. So that's the answer to that is when you want to hone in on any skill, and for mine, that is that. Like... It's not about shows or anything like that or videos for Instagram. It's just, I want to know.
Okay. I've got one here. Have you gotten any advice from pros or coaches that have stuck with you throughout your career that you want to share? Like just some key quotes, I guess.
Oh God. I got acetoisms coming out my ass. literally the amount of, the amount of information that Chris has given me is ridiculous. I want to have you answer this because I actually want to read what I want to list for this because I've got a screenshot of a text message he sent me in like 2010 that I post every now and then that just summarizes everything. So
I got a couple of quotes that I just off the top of my head. But one was Chad Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me the story about how when him and Ronnie won the first Olympia in 98.
Right.
And they were sitting on the bed eating pizza. And there's like a famous photo of them.
Uh-huh.
And Ronnie's holding a pizza. And I guess Chad said to him, you know, I think I've told this story before, but it's just one of the key things that always comes up. Chad said to him, he goes, hey, listen, man, like, did you do anything that I didn't tell you to do? Like, it's perfect time to tell me right now because
we've already won.
Like, we won the Olympia and you look, I'm fucking believable. So, you know, is there anything that you did that you didn't tell me? Like, did you eat anything? You take anything? You do anything? And Ronnie just looked at him like he was confused and he goes, never even crossed my mind. And so like that's a real important quote that I think affected me. I was like, just stick to the fucking plan. You know what I mean? Just stick to the plan. And so that's a good quote. You got one?
Yeah, I'm going to go with one just off the top of my head now, too, because I want to find this. But the first time and this is something even as somebody who preaches specific training, when I asked Chris the best way to train, his answer was fucking hard.
Yeah. He's had that conversation.
And when he said it, it was funny because you have to know Chris at a level, I think, to really get it. Like, number one, Chris actually doesn't swear very often. So when that pops in alone, it has a little more ring to it than when I do. Right. And I realize that it's accurate. Like we all sit around and there's so much delving into this angle and that angle. But if you really think about it, if you just get in and get nasty with whatever you're doing, you're going to change. You're going to grow. You're going to maintain if you're in prep. And that has stuck to me a ton, which is train fucking hard. And then I see it now. So I can tell how guys train by looking at their bodies.
Right.
You know, you just can. Like, you, even elite guys, I know who trains how. So do you.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, those are them. But then one of the big ones that I think also with that Chris really drove home that I always say to myself is work harder than you ever thought was possible. And right. It sounds like so like, what does that even mean? But I would remind myself of that when I got tired. Because I don't know that anyone's ever died on a treadmill from effort. Outside things, there could be a lot of things that can happen.
Right.
But I don't think anyone's ever died from effort.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple of preps in my life where I've actually, you know, it's funny to think of, but, you know, when you've been doing your cardio, thankfully it's 1 a.m. and no one's in the gym and you're emotionally spent and you're trying to not literally cry on the stepmill. And I just remember thinking in those times, like, just fucking do it. Yeah, just work harder. And you get done and you're smoked. But those are also the days and the preps that I still look back at. And I'm like, God, that was a good fucking time. Like, you know what I mean? Something sadistic about us, I guess.
I got a good one here from my buddy Kyle.
Shoot.
What's the weirdest experience you've ever had with a fan at an expo?
Oh, God. There are so many.
Let's hear one.
There are so many. Okay, let me see. I'll start with some. Well, there's some really basic ones that everyone knows. So I'll start with like a really basic. There's been a few times where first off I'm handed the wet hand for a handshake and I wonder immediately where that person's hand was because it's literally sopping with sweat or something. Then they don't want to give you your hand back at the end of a handshake. And then I've actually had people like they stick around long enough that you have to have someone ask them to leave.
Right.
Because there's a line of people. Most people this understanding, like, okay, there are 30 people behind me. Take my 2 to 3 minutes. You know, and you know, Ron, you're like me. Like, I don't want to just sign a picture and adios. Like, I like to hear what you got going on, this and that. But I mean, 15, 20 minutes, there's people behind you. It just doesn't work. You know, so that would be a normal one. But I'd say the biggest one was my wake up call of what it meant to be behind a booth at a show. So I went to the Arnold 1 year just as a spectator. No big deal. Nobody gave a fuck. Went home. The following year, I had built up my name a little bit and I was working a booth. And there was a woman that worked the booth across from me and we were chatting back and forth, you know, whatever. And I remember the end of the first day, she was like, hey, where are you staying? And at the time, it was the Hyatt that everybody stays at downtown.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm at the Hyatt, you know, not even thinking anything of it. And she fucking hands me a room key and says, 11:22, hope to see you later. And I remember it just light bulbing, like, everything changes when you're on this side of the booth because I'm the same fucking loser I was last year and no one gave a shit that I was here. But that's that was funny. A weird experience. And I mean, for those of you who are like, ooh, that's awesome. I was creeped out because I'm like, oh, you're a hoe. So obviously I did not use the room key, but it definitely was a wake up call. Like this world is a fucked up place, actually.
you know what
I mean? Like I'm as much as I joke about it, like that's odd as fuck to me. You know nothing about me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah. I'd say, you know, there's a bunch that are all kind of the same, but they're weird. Mm-hmm. Sort of like the fan that sticks around too long, but in a bit of a creepy way.
Right.
You know, and then there's the fans that sort of started kind of repetitively ask you like, you know, how big are your arms? How much do you bench? those sort of questions when they kind of come out rapid fire.
Right.
It's a little creepy, kind of. It comes. It's a weird vibe. But if you're in the moment, you'd recognize the experience. But yeah, there's some of those people, and they're harmless. They're harmless guys. So you just like talk to them for a minute, and it's all good. But you could tell they're like got that little bit of a creepy vibe. Mm-hmm. But no big deal. But I'd say one of the funniest ones was there was this couple that dropped by the booth one year. And they were both like kind of giving off the vibe, like they were looking for like, you know, sex at the booth.
A third party.
Yeah. And anyways, and they came back on like the second day of the Arnold, and they're like, hey, so like, you know, what are your plans for this evening? Blah, 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 you know, and that sort of thing. Anyways, long of the short is the husband's like, you know, you want to bang my wife? And I was like, no, it's okay, man. I'm okay. You know, it was just you know.
People don't realize this shit happens. You're like,
no, I know, but yeah, the offers are out there. It kind of comes to you at the booth, but there's some funny circumstances.
Yeah, I've always thought that would be an interesting one, though. Like, you want me to do what? Okay.
Are you gonna be there?
Yeah, I mean, will you film it? Never mind.
Okay, your turn.
Okay, perfect. Let me see here. Bum, bum, bum. Photos. Oops, I'm in the wrong section. I got a little wild there for a minute. I had Scott sending me text messages as well. Bum, bum, bum. Okay, here we go. Well, this is basic. Never mind. I'm not answering that. It's too easy. Oh, man. I just have to laugh. When someone asks me how to optimize sleep, I get confused. I'm like, so you haven't been following me for very long, huh?
That's
funny. I don't do that. Okay, oh, this is good. This is good for you. This is a Ron question.
Uh-oh.
As far as leg press, hack squat, seated row, incline chest press machine, who makes the best pieces you've used? I'm gonna go get a drink. You answer this question. Just kidding.
What are the machines? Is he like want the each one? Okay.
Yeah, I want you to break it down whether he does or not. So a leg press, okay. A hack squat, a seated row, and an incline chest press.
It just depends. Like, there's lots of good stuff out there. I mean, there's several brands that make awesome leg presses and hack squats. I mean, those, it's not hard to find a good one. I guess if you're looking for most durable and stuff, I don't know. I'm a huge fan of Atlantis stuff. I don't know, there's a lot of good companies out there, you know, like I used a Star Trek leg press the other day a couple months ago, and it was just like an old flex fit. It felt the same.
All right. Whoa. You're pissing me off now. So I'm going to just get direct.
Your favorite
leg press you've ever used. Go.
An old Nebula.
There he goes. See, I knew we could get the answers.
there's some of the old Nebulas out there. I love the ones with the rails on the underside.
Yep. I know exactly the one. One of my gyms.
Like the one at Bev's. The one at Bev's is perfect. Has the three platforms, like the three mm-hmm. levels. That's yeah, a perfect one. Yep.
And I know this one, but what about extension? Best extension you've ever used.
The newer plate loaded prime. Leg extension is my favorite. That's the best.
I need that. What's that deal with the hook on that one? Like to bring your legs in at the end or the beginning where you can unhook it. You know what I'm talking about? Remember you showed me when we were using yours? Like you could snap it into place before you go.
Get in it and then you pull the little pin and you push the lever back.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's very adjustable. It's awesome.
I found that getting into that machine and more importantly, getting out when my legs are pumped beyond belief was like night and day with their stuff.
It's great. Yeah, it's great.
What about a row then? Because he said a row, chest supported row.
When he said seated row, what does he mean? Like,
I'm thinking like a chest supporter, like the hammer row or.
Oh, I love the DY row, the hammer DY row.
Yep.
That's an awesome piece. We have one. We're lucky to have one. Yeah, that's one of my favorite rows ever.
Yeah, mine too, for sure.
Okay. Cool. I love equipment.
I know, that's why I was like, I'm not even going to answer. Let's let Ron do this.
I had another one here. That's a little deep. I don't know if we can go deep again.
He's not ready. I wasn't ready. I just saw Kevin Hart's face screaming, he's not ready.
He's not ready. Okay. Okay, bodybuilding doesn't exist. What do you do tomorrow? Where do you move? What do you do?
Bodybuilding doesn't exist.
You gotta do something else. Bodybuilding doesn't exist. The whole industry's gone.
Oh, well, I mean, I would probably do half of what I'm already doing. I'd get back into retail, stores, because I enjoy, unlike a lot of people, I enjoy the art of the deal. So a lot of people think that when you're, like, for example, when you own a store, if I'm selling spoons, I just buy a spoon for $1 and I sell it to you for $2. In reality, there's a lot of things going on my negotiation with the guy I bought the spoon for $1 from. I want to get them from him for 75 cents. You know, so I like that stuff. I'll definitely get back into owning a business of some sort that sells items. Same thing, sales in general. Like, I used to love to just sell. There's something about controlling your fate that I love. Okay. I would rather make $0 for sure, with a nice incentive to make a ton of money, you know, so commission-based kind of thing. I do that for sure. And then real estate. I love real estate.
Okay, cool. Awesome. I have no fucking idea.
Ron was hoping I would say something insightful he could run with. He's like, fuck, that's it.
Oh, Jesus.
You can sell BMX bikes. Come on.
Well, no, actually, it's funny. So I'd have
you
to
have more hobbies and interests than anyone I know. So
yeah. So there's a whole bunch of stuff I'm really interested in. I just don't have time for it because I bodybuild.
Right.
And my whole life is the gym and clients and everything. Mm-hmm. But if that entire industry vanished, I'd probably be involved in something to do with guitars, BMX bikes, maybe buying and selling, maybe trying to, maybe opening a shop or online or something. I don't know. Maybe I just try to get back in the industry as a collector, doing something like that.
Right.
I think the thing with the internet is every industry now has people like, well, I guess people like us. Every industry has people like us where they're podcasting. They don't have any network.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing it from their laptop, putting out their expert opinion,
mm-hmm.
putting out this, putting out that, and making a living from it. So
right.
What we do in this industry, obviously the fitness industry is a little bit, you know, really huge, but every industry, even the small ones, have these little niches where there's people making money, helping people, you know, helping people find what they want, helping people get what they want, whether it be results or a product, that sort of mm-hmm. thing. And yeah. I guess your art of the deal, I guess I sort of have, like, I understand that. Mm-hmm. Like, I could see myself buying and selling equipment one day.
Oh, for sure.
Like getting stuff, getting it where, you know, you take a gym that goes bankrupt, you get a deal on it, you sell every piece individually for a markup. And like, that's a business. But obviously, if the fitness industry disappeared, I wouldn't be doing that. But maybe you could do it with something else.
Yeah, no. And that's, I think that's the fun that people don't realize is when you're into that kind of stuff, I was taught, and it's true, is you make your money on your buy, you collect it on your sale.
Right.
So how right. you buy it decides how much money you make.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I always dug that for sure. And yeah, I could totally see you doing those things. I think what it is by man, you can, if you're passionate about something, you can find a way to make a living with it.
Yeah.
You know? And the internet has made it to where that's kind of how I feel when people say, oh, it's so hard to make money. I'm like, well, you're not really thinking then.
I thought maybe I'd start a podcast talking about movies or music or something. Like, I might get it, you know, involved in that sort of shit.
Well, you should do that anyways.
Yeah.
Scott, can you help Ron do a movie and or random bullshit podcast? Because I want to watch it. Thank you. He said yes, even if he's not there. I feel that he said yes. People, okay. I'm working here. Okay, here's a good one. Bodybuilding.
Yeah, totally. So we're on it. We'll start it tomorrow.
Yes, we'll start it tomorrow. I like when a voice just pops in over top.
Yes.
Okay. Since Flex has already beaten Hottie, will he be able to claim an Open Olympia title? And can he beat Bonac and Curry?
It's possible. Flex Lewis could. I mean, you can't say he can't. Never seen him at 230.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, I mean, God. you know?
Here's my answer. I got a great answer for that. Let's all tell Flex he can't do it.
Exactly.
So that
let's all tell him he's too short. He loves that.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's how I look at people like Flex. And not that he's internally driven.
Yeah.
But I don't think, like, I remember when I'll never forget when last year. Yeah. No, 2 years ago. When everyone was talking about Derek, Chase and Flex and how Flex, I remember a particular person in the industry that I don't like and everybody knows I don't like, said that Flex was basically having a temper tantrum because he was afraid that Lunsford was going to catch him. And I remember laughing and Derek is a fucking freak.
Oh yeah. He's amazing.
But Flex Lewis doesn't look at anything behind him.
No.
So when I heard that, I remember laughing. And then I remember when he walked out and absolutely annihilated everyone, thinking to myself, I wonder how dumb anyone feels that thought that Flex Lewis was worried about anything. You know what I mean?
Remember, no one's going to be talking about dog crap training in 2 years.
Exactly. Yeah. So my answer is absolutely Flex could win. I am, as a friend, I am an immediate fan wanting to know what it's going to look like.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be exciting. Awesome. And I don't even think he knows what it's going to look like, other than he knows it's going to be freaky as shit.
Okay. Is it your turn?
Well, I just asked that one, but I got 100 of them, so I can just keep rolling.
Okay.
Oh, I'm gonna make you answer this one, even though we've touched it. Top few TV series to binge watch.
Oh, currently or ever?
Ever.
Well, geez, that's hard. There's lots of good ones. Fuck.
If you miss one of them, I'm going to pretend you didn't like it. If you say, like, you forgot to say Seinfeld or something, I'm like, oh, he hated it.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, fuck.
Let's stick with, like, Netflix-ish.
Okay, Netflix-ish stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Sons of Anarchy is a great one.
Of course.
That's a fun show. Dexter was great. I even liked the last three seasons when it went off the rails. It was like nuts. I didn't even mind. I was like, let's just see how bad this gets.
I didn't even care. They never lost to me either with that.
No, I watched right to the end. I was like, okay, that's how it ends. It wasn't even bad. Yeah. And what else is there that's awesome? Oh man, there's so many. Homeland. Homeland was awesome.
I didn't watch that yet.
We watched the whole thing, all 9 seasons. Spectacular show, amazing acting, good writing. I don't know. There's so many good ones, man.
Have you started Peaky Blinders yet?
No, I haven't. I know that.
Damn it. I told you this 2 weeks ago.
No. Or 2 whole weeks. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Listen, you know I don't watch a shit ton of TV, so if I tell you something's worth watching,
I have to throw a sci-fi one in there. There has to be one sci-fi one in there. I'm a huge fan of the Battlestar Galactica reboot that came out in like the mid-2000s.
What about Altered Carbon?
I only saw the first season. It was very good.
What happened? You lost interest?
I heard the second season wasn't as good. I had a lot of people telling me.
It wasn't as good, but
it's still good?
Okay. Yeah. I think they switched some writers, I swear to God. there's no way that it dropped like where you were so into it versus I watched it to finish.
Right. Well, I think one of the problems with that show, and it's obviously a risky premise, is switching the main actor.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't matter if the next guy's awesome. It's not the guy that people got attached to
right
in the beginning. So, and then the problem was I liked that actor. The first actor they had, I liked, because he was in House of Cards.
Yep.
And he was fantastic in House of Cards. And
another murder show.
Yeah, he was in The Killing. Was it The Killing?
Yes, what was The Killings. Called? Yes.
So
that was a great
show. Yeah, that was 4 seasons. That was an awesome show. Really good surprise how good that was. And he was really good in that. He was that meth head cop, remember?
Yep.
Yeah, he was like an ex-meth head. And he was real skinny. So I really liked that actor. So when I watched Altered Carbon, I got attached to him. I'm like, fuck, that guy's awesome. And now he's gone. And he's gone. And they have another actor playing that character. because like the whole premise is the brain switches bodies.
Right. But that's so how they lost you when it switched.
Yeah. They take the card out and they just put it in. It's like switching phones. Right. And so that's the premise of the show. So it's the same character, but he's just in a completely different actor's body.
Right.
And that's different than say like the James Bond movie series where they switch from Connery to Moore. I mean, you expect an actor to make eight or, you know, six or eight movies and then he's going to move on to something else. Right. Yeah, yeah, so yeah. You like expect that to happen, but when it's a TV series and it's done abruptly like that, like one season at a time, I think it kind of makes it unwatchable.
Right. No, I hear you. That makes sense. That makes
the
sense.
Only show that ever successfully did that was just an odd, wacky, obviously one of a kind show, which is Doctor Who.
Right.
Which is the sci-fi show out of England that's been on for like 50 fucking years. And, you know, every once in a while they change the actor who plays Doctor Who and it's a completely different person. Right.
But and, because of timeline, they have to. Well, yeah, that guy's dead.
But that's also like a sci-fi show. So sometimes it's a younger, sometimes he's older, sometimes like it was even Doctor Who was a woman for like a few seasons, I think.
Oh no, shit. Yeah, I don't know that
show. So like they it's the same premise, right? It's just a different body.
Right.
So yeah, that's the only show that pulled it off, but that's a, you know, kind of old school and had a lot of those weird old cult fans that would follow it anyways.
That wouldn't have mattered. I hear you.
Yeah. 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 Nowadays it's hard to do that.
Yeah. You can't, I have a hard time when they do that with even basic things. I mean, when Suits lost Mike and just, they started bringing, I just was like, I finished season 9 because I needed to finish it.
Right. It's kind of like when Michael left The Office.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's still great because obviously they had a fortunate situation there where the entire cast was spectacular.
Yeah.
And they could kind of carry the show, but it still wasn't the same, you know?
Yeah, no, it could never be the same without what I think who was the glue. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
You ready for a quick bodybuilding one?
Yes.
What is the max body fat percent you would allow in a bulk before doing a mini cut?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't really like, it's not like I'm actually calipering people. I'm just looking at photos. But, I mean, there's a fatness. I would assume it's around probably realistically 12 to 14%.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, you know, I mean, if you're, it depends on how much muscle you have, right?
Right.
I mean, if you were 14%, you still would look pretty good.
Right. Yeah. Well, that thing is, I think that, you know, percentages are key. But like you said, it's how do you look? Because I've had looks fat. Where I've got, yeah. It should be obvious you're a bodybuilder and not a football player at all times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I really think.
You should be able to see some abs, I think, for when everyone.
I think also when you get heavy enough, it actually weakens your training. You start having low back pumps. I like to push to that point, and my athletes are all over the place as far as what that number is. But once weight is impeding training, it's hurting me. Now it's just dead. Now it's just dead weight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so totally. I think if you're having those issues, there's your answer.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get done with a set of deads and say, oh, fuck, how am I going to do the next one? Because my low back is blown now.
Right.
You know, where I did it as a kid, I used to have that all the time. Like, not in a difference between needing to recover for the next set and literally saying I shouldn't do another set.
Right. Right.
And I have been there. I've been fat enough where I had to cut workouts or change things because I was chasing a number on a scale versus how I looked and felt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, this is a fun one. And this is an easy answer to me, but who do you think is legit the biggest eater in the fitness and bodybuilding world?
Oh, hmm. Well, I mean, you know, Juan Morell's got those huge cheat days, but then you go, well, fitness and bodybuilding world, does that include Thor? Does that include Brian Shaw? Because if it includes those guys, obviously they're the biggest eaters.
Can any of us ever forget the infamous Kai Greene IHOP video?
Yeah.
He literally spent like close to $300 in IHOP eating.
So if you're talking about like pro bodybuilders, like Olympia guys, I have seen and heard many stories about Kai Greene just eating recklessly nonstop all the time.
So have I.
Yeah. And like still looking amazing. Like every single time I've ever heard of him going out to eat after a guest posing, There was always
a painful bill,
like just ridiculous amounts of food. And he's got a guest posing the next weekend and he's still in shape for everything. So it's like, he just fucking takes a huge amount of food, that guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I heard I've seen him eat a few times and talked to promoters that have paid the food bills and all that sort of stuff. So, but he's famous for eating a lot of food, man. But I don't know. I don't watch what all the guys eat. I mean, there's lots of people that can eat a lot in front of a camera. But right. Then you follow them around on a normal day and they're like, you're like, oh, that's all you ate? How do you look like that? You know, I've seen that too.
Yeah, I don't eat nearly as much as people think I do.
Yeah.
When I have to eat, it's a battle. Like when we did a challenge with Mutant where they wanted me to eat some big burger. I told them before it even started, I'm like, I'm actually not going to attempt to eat that. Like I will eat the burger, but I'm not going to try to finish it. I have no desire of stuffing myself to death.
Right.
For a video, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I guess whether it makes it a less good thing, it's just, I can't. And if I do eat that way, the rest of the day is fucked.
I look back at how
I'll probably eat less meals. If I eat one giant meal as my third meal, I'd probably eat less calories.
Right. I look back to my 20s when I was in my 20s.
Uh-huh.
I ate so much fucking trash in my 20s, just trying to get huge. Right.
Right.
Just trying to get huge. Like I'd have a cheat meal every fucking day. Like every single day, you know, except for dieting. And then I'd probably over diet every fucking time, but you know, in a frantic race to get ripped. Okay. One more question.
Shoot. You got it? Or you want me to get it?
I got it. What are some of your favorite mutant memories?
Oh God.
So let's just throw a couple out, maybe rapid fire a little bit.
Yeah, I've got a bunch.
When you just think of some of your favorite mutant memories.
So my number one would be when we trained back at Dino's gym.
Yep.
Was definitely one of my favorites because it was, you and I had just a fucking retarded workout anyways.
The energy was crazy.
The energy in the gym was nuts. And I remember when we were doing rows or some shit, I finished a set. You know how sometimes when you push a set real hard, all the sound goes away?
Yeah.
And when I put down the rep and the sound went back on, I realized that everyone in the gym was screaming at us.
Yeah, I know. It was awesome.
And I looked up and I was like, there were a lot of fucking people in there. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh shit. Cause when you're in your, like, truthfully, and you know this, I was just training with Ron and Dino.
Yeah.
I'm not even thinking about anybody else. So then it was like a realization. Oh fuck. Everyone's watching. I didn't even know, you know,
that was also
a great time.
I had an extra good time that workout because we did bent over barbell rows.
Uh huh.
And we actually did off the floor. What are the dead stop ones? What do you call them? Pendele rows?
Yeah, we did both.
Yeah. So we did pendele rows and then we did like normal bent rows, both back to back. And I remember I only went to three plates, but that was actually like a big deal for me that day because, you know, that was like, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, two or three. Yeah.
So I was only like a year off my torn quad.
Yep.
And I had a bunch of hip, like every time I bent over, I felt like my one hip was weak.
Right. Or leg raising.
Bent rows were one of the exercises I just hadn't gotten back because as I would row, I felt like my left side, my hip would twist and I would wind up crooked. And I thought, fuck, I can't row like this. I'm going to hurt myself.
Right.
And I would get like more pump in one side of my back. And it was just really awkward. And, but I remember we rode that night, barbell rode, and my back fucking pumped up and felt great. And my hips didn't feel crooked. And it was just like, I was like, ah, fuck yeah. Because, you know, it's like constantly trying to like win one.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, had nothing to do with the weight. It just had to do with the fact I was able to like grab a heavy bar and go hard, you know?
Right. Yeah. After a 10-hour day at the show.
Yeah, you know, just one of those
I don't think
things.
People realize either. Like, we're at the gym at like 10:30 at night doing this shit.
Yeah, so one of the things I love about those workouts that we do on those expo nights is it reminds me of when I used to go to the gym at 6 p.m., which is always a busy time, right?
Right.
I used to go to the gym at 6 p.m. after football practice.
Already smoked.
So I'd been at school all day. And then football practice for 2 hours. And yep. And we went hard. Like we were hitting and fucking sprinting. And you know, we went hard back in those days. They didn't take it easy on high school kids.
Right.
We hit every fucking day.
Right.
Like we would take Friday off pads.
Yeah, because you had a game on Saturday or Friday.
Game on Saturday. So yeah. Friday, we'd just wear jerseys and helmets and run through footwork. But Monday to Thursday, we'd fucking close the door, Shark Tank, fucking everything.
Right.
You know, I'd have bloody knees and scabs on my knees, and I'd go to the, I'd eat, I'd have like a shake and a bunch of chips or something, drink a chocolate milk, and walk over to the gym and have like a normal bodybuilding workout.
And as if you'd been resting and preparing for it.
Yeah, and the gym would be packed with people because it was 6 o'clock rush.
Yep.
And it just had like the energy because it was high energy, but you'd get there and you're in that delirious state. You're like, oh right. My God, I should be sleeping, but I'm jacked on the fucking can of Jolt I just drank. Remember back in the day?
Brought the Jolt back. Holy shit.
Back in the day, how's that?
You said that and I went, bing.
Oh yeah, pound a fucking Jolt, double the caffeine, twice the sugar. Boom. Pound a Jolt, go to the gym. Like this in high school. Yep. And we didn't have monsters back then, boys and girls.
Yeah, there was no zero-calorie monsters laying around.
No, man. So, yeah, no zero-calorie nothing except Diet Coke. So yeah, it was just like this delirious state where you're like, come into the gym and you're like, I can't stop moving or I'm going to fall asleep.
Right.
Like, and you just grab the bar and throw it in the rack and you start warming up. And yep. You're like, I can't sit down. I got to put a plate on. I got to do another one. Like, it was like almost like a frantic, like, you can't stop or you won't get moving again.
Yep.
And also, you want to get home so you can just eat and like you've had a long day. So you're like, yeah, I got an hour to train. And then all the time too, this was, you know, some of this was before I had a car. So I'm waiting for a ride home and the ride home is coming at 7. So I got a 1 hour to train.
You've literally 1 hour to get it done.
So yeah. And then obviously get my own car when I'm 16 and all that. But I just remember those days and those expo workouts kind of remind me of that because of the exhaustion, but yet you're kind of jacked up, you know?
That was always my rule. When we go back, I'm like, just don't sit down in the hotel room.
Yeah.
Do not sit. Cause if I sat down, I would still go, but it would be like, God, I bring it back to life. Come on, hey, Dust.
Eat standing up.
Yeah. Remember we'd eat like in Germany, you eat in that one spot, go straight up the room. And all I would do, I would rinse off real quick. Cause I hate feeling dirty when I get to the gym, put on fresh clothes and fucking straight down to the lobby. Let's go.
We'd rush back and I'd eat and then I'd pound a pre-workout.
Right.
And I'd lay down with the 20 minute alarm. And just trash, and then my alarm wakes me up, and I know you're in the lobby waiting.
Yeah, you probably got your clothes on. You just gotta step in.
Yeah, I just fucking hit the floor straight out the door, go to the gym. So that was I like that.
For sure. Yeah, no, those are definitely some of the best. Some of the best for sure.
We only got one. You said some of my favorite. We talked about that workout the whole time.
That workout, and then it all still goes back to workouts. What are we fucking doing?
Yeah, it's funny. Okay, awesome, man. I guess that's episode 48, eh? Wow.
It is, and I'm going to actually – I have a lot. I was just scrolling through. I'm going to screenshot a lot of these questions so we can toss them in because looked. I'm like, man, I've missed a lot of good ones. So we'll have them, and then hopefully we can get – we need to get a guest for next week. We'll figure that out.
Yeah. Okay, remember, we got mutant codes, so if you go on iammutant.com, Dusty20 and BigRon20, so don't forget that. Anything else we got to remind? Like, subscribe, share, and comment. Got to do that for us.
Do that, and then just keep pushing Ron on this upcoming movie podcast he'll be doing, and Random Shit by Ron. That's going to be the show. Random shit Ron knows.
So it turns out that laboratory mice actually have less telomeres than wild mice. So if you're doing experiments on them, the results will be different.
Everyone knows that.
Oh, come on now. Okay. All right, man. Thanks, buddy.
Until next time.
It's just bodybuilding.